Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording of the sermon and reading from our January 17th service. The title of Joseph Ben-Narek's sermon is The Content of Our Character. Thanks for listening.
The reading this morning is a very short poem by the great poet Langston Hughes, who helped author our earlier reading. This is called Refugee in America, and I chose this reading to bring forward the word refugee. It's a word that we hear quite frequently in today's news. Refugee in America. There are words like freedom, sweet and wonderful to say. On my heartstrings, freedom sings all day, every day. There are words like liberty that almost make me cry. If you had known what I knew, you would know why. But before we start, I want to say that I learned something on Friday on NPR, that great StoryCorps program about Martin Luther King. And this is a story done by his white teenage driver, who's now quite old, older. Yeah, no offense. And he said, Martin Luther King was a chain smoker. And I love that. I love the fact that one of our martyred saints was a chain smoker. And he also said that Martin Luther King was a horrible driver. I like that too. So, point being, Martin Luther King was a human being. And please know that during this sermon, you are quite likely going to feel heat at some point. The heat of anger with me, for showcasing symbols and words that you don't enjoy confronting or considering. The heat of friction when your high-minded values rub against long-standing injustices in the world. And hopefully the heat that comes from renewed, passionate, and sustained commitment to make positive change in the world that is pleading for you to leverage your talents, your creativity, your dedication, and your imagination. I welcome the heat, and I also invite any accompanying light. So tomorrow is Martin Luther King's Day. It's a federal holiday that recognizes and celebrates this most ordinary and common, and most extraordinary and uncommon person. While the words ordinary and common are not adjectives that we frequently hear in regards to Martin Luther King or Mother Teresa or Nelson Mandela or Mahatma Gandhi, listen close to these most famous words of Martin Luther King's most famous speech. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Translation, as a parent, I want the best for my children. A most common and ordinary desire. As your parents thought the same for you and your siblings, and if you have children, you thought the same for them. Here is another way in which Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, and Nelson Mandela are ordinary. They are all dead. Two assassinated, and two died of old age. And in their dying, they left the world to us, to caretake, to advance, to use every atom of our ingenious creativity to build a vibrant, just, abundant, and fair community. And I love that word, community, and the tight relationship between the two words, common and unity. Common unity. We all want the best for our children. The last time I was in Washington, D.C., I made a little pilgrimage to the Lincoln Memorial. And although we all know that iconic place from films and photographs and documentaries, there is nothing, nothing like standing in the presence of that amazing sculpture. Now, while I was there, I watched a white family who were speaking Russian take a snapshot at Lincoln's feet. Then a family from India, whose skins were as dark as Gandhi's, asked me to take their snapshot at Lincoln's feet, happily. Then a family from Asia saw me taking the picture of the family from India and asked me if I would take their photo. I couldn't quite catch the language that they were speaking with each other. But each family, parents, grandparents, and children, standing and smiling at the camera, backdropped by the moon-white feet of that colossal martyr who helped bring our world to a place where people of all races and ethnicities could stand together in a sacred place, smile their best, and record the moment. And then I turned 180 degrees, and I saw the Washington Monument and the reflecting pool, and the image that came immediately to mind was Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, delivered from exactly where I stood. Now, that place is a sacred place for the entire world, and there I was. Now, I had recently watched the entire I Have a Dream speech on YouTube, highly recommended, so both the words and the visuals were fresh in mind. I was filled with emotions, and tears rose. And in my mind's eye, I could see that sparkling ocean of bodies. And then I saw what Martin Luther King saw, the majestic, bone-white obelisk of the Washington Monument pointing skyward. And Martin Luther King, soon to be a colossal martyr, standing at the feet of Lincoln and calling the 200,000 people present to realize the dream of justice and equality. Now the speech, which began as a very scripted text, soon developed into this fiery snap-to oration that could have only been delivered by a minister at the height of their powers. The cadences, the rhythms, the themes, the calling upon the divine. Martin Luther King, in that speech, touched something. And that speech is considered one of the greatest speeches of the 20th century. And then I imagine something even more powerful. Those 200,000 people, many of them pictured right there, taking in the message and dispersing. Those 200,000 people taking in the message and returning to their communities throughout the country to serve as agents of change that moved the dream forward toward reality, to move the dream forward over some uncommonly rough terrain. Mr. Soundman, would you please turn my microphone off? Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you. So over the years, those 200,000 in ones and twos and in tens and twenties sat at lunch counters. They drank from water fountains. They voted. They marched. They organized. They got beaten. They got threatened. They got terrorized, jailed, and lynched. They wrote, and they sang, and they preached. And for the most part, those ones and twos, those tens and twenties are now anonymous. And it's likely that most of them found some sort of nourishment and strength and focus in gatherings like this one, gatherings in a sacred place to share fellowship in a cause, to share fellowship in high ideals, and to practice being together. All social change movements have deep taproots in religious communities and in real people trying to live their values the best that they can. Common values, common dream, common unity. And that is where this place and each of you and all of us comes in. This place, with our high ideals, is where we inspire and support and find focus and purpose in our first and guiding principle of Unitarian Universalism, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, every person. And today I was so proud to have the offering go to Gathering Place so we could witness some on-the-ground activism, which is exactly what Martin Luther King Day is all about. And then we extend out to live our values in the grit of the real world. And as Gandhi, another colossal martyr, said, to become the change that you want to see in the world. And that change happens. It happens and is proved by a brilliant and remarkable detail about Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. One of the early members of this congregation, Louise Nomura, was a Japanese-American who was interned in a camp during World War II. Now, in the mid-1990s, years after this injustice, she received an official apology from the United States government, along with a reparations check. Now, she used these reparations as a challenge donation for our then small congregation to raise more money in order to have the financial resources to realize the dream of a fellowship building. It was a savvy investment that paid huge dividends in the realm of if you build it, they will come. The congregation built what they thought was a vast cathedral-like space, our current fellowship hall, which we outgrew the building very rapidly. Plans began for a new sanctuary, a larger sanctuary that could serve more people, serve more families, serve the community by hosting events like a Martin Luther King Day celebration. So welcome to the manifestation of that vision. This sanctuary is a place where the values of love and respect and inquiry spark and thrive and renew and strengthen together. And in a touch of invisible grace, Louise's letter is inlaid inside the handmade door that leads into our fellowship hall. It is silently present every time you pass that threshold. I love that about this place. So the physical building that's a Unitarian Universalist church, a building which holds a sanctuary and houses a congregation that tries to live seven quite astonishing principles, has as its financial taproot racist Japanese internment camps. Think about that, people. That is astonishing. And that is the essence of common unity, turning hatred and suspicion and injustice and racism into an apology, and then leveraging the apology to create a place where living, breathing people are nourished by fellowship, inspired by dreams, and challenged to be the change that we want to see. In a town where the high school mascot used to be called the Redskins. Redskins was a hot word in this town for decades, and it continues to be hot on the national stage. Many, of course, ask, what's the big deal? We use Redskins to honor the Native Americans. And many professional sports teams from major cities, they tout Native American names, the Cleveland Indians, the Atlanta Braves, the Washington Redskins. In the same Washington, where Martin Luther King made his famous speech, football fans root for the Redskins. Now, during the course of researching this sermon, I discovered a study out of Boise State University entitled Native American Mascots, colon. And now get ready for the world's longest academic subtitle. A quantitative and qualitative study of students' acceptability perceptions of Native mascots versus theoretical use of other ethnic groups' iconography by sports teams. It's a mouthful, for sure. And the study asked a set of questions about mascots that use derogatory terms for different ethnic groups, and whether participants of those mascot names were racist, insulting, or demeaning. And before I read the question aloud, please be forewarned that this survey uses one of the hottest words in the English language, and I am making a conscious choice to say that word aloud so we can feel the heat. Question. Please indicate whether you feel the following team names are racist or insulting. A. Washington Chinks. B. Washington Honkies. C. Washington Niggers. D. Washington Redskins. E. Washington Wetbacks. Now, the results of the survey were encouraging in that a majority of respondents felt that each term was racist, though the results suggest that we have a long way to go. 94% said yes for the Washington N-word, that was racist. 87% for chinks, 85% for wetbacks, 71% for honkies, and 54% for redskins. The first question, of course, to ask is, who are these 6% of people who do not think that the N-word is a racist term? And second, 54% for Redskins is very close to 50-50. So I am proud that the graduating class of 2015 was the first Port Townsend High School class who were not the Redskins. They were the Red Hawks. So let's honor this progress. And while it took a long time, let's be so grateful that we moved away from racism and didn't simply replace it with another racist term, any of the racist terms from A to Z that the we create for the them. Abbeys, bananas, blue gums, bohunks, bongos, chichis, chinks, chugs, coolies, coons, crackers, dagos, dinks, dotheads, frogs, gaijin, gooks, goyim, gringos, guineas, gyps, half-breeds, hillbillies, honkies, himies, lawn jockeys, limies, macacas, round eyes, sheeny, sheepshaggers, slopes, spicks, squaws, towelheads, twinkies, wetbacks, wiggers, wops, yids, and zips. Did I miss anybody? It's amazing the racist names that we have created for the other. Which brings me to another sacred place in Port Townsend, the Food Co-op. The Food Co-op is one of my favorite food stores on the planet Earth, where organics and local farming and engaged membership and fair trade are four of the key values that help run that organization. And real-world engagement with those values are helping change the world on the Olympic Peninsula in significant ways. And yet, even within that activist hotbed, we can be confronted with racism, and a confrontation can boil down to the small talk with a cashier. For example, during a mundane transaction, a cashier realized that they had shortchanged me and said, "Oops, wait, hold on, here's that other dollar. I don't want to jip you." Jip you. Jip, short for gypsy, the implication being that gypsies would shortchange me because, well, that's what those people do. And that's why the Nazis rounded up the gypsies and put them in concentration camps, like the Jews and the homosexuals and the disabled, the kikes and the fags and the crips, and the other undesirables, like white, round-eyed Americans rounded up Japanese Americans and forced them into internment camps. The cashier did not realize what they were saying. And I had a choice at that moment to offer a statement like, you know where the word jip comes from? Now, that little incident happened in a food co-op where the dialogue about values is quite welcome. That little incident also happened within a mile of a food bank, within a mile from where a homeless man died in the bushes near a lagoon, within a mile from a church door that is made in part of a reparations letter. And it happened within sight of a place called Indian Island, where huge gray Navy ships are loaded with munitions. Indian Island. There is so much to do. Which brings me to Jocko. Now, as you may know from my previous sermons, I love finding weird things in the world, and I bring many curious objects into my life. My wife, she worries that one day I might become a hoarder, so I counterbalance her worry. Every time I take a box or a bag to the thrift store, I make certain that she sees me loading the car. You know, there is an out valve, honey. Second, I absolutely love estate sales. Few activities please me more than going through somebody's library or basement or kitchen and finding things that I cannot do without. Wooden yardsticks, paint-by-number paintings, vintage crescent wrenches, orphaned Russian nesting dolls, and a Shriner's Fez are just a few of the items that I have brought into my life last year. And I realize that's an absolute counter-message to Victoria Poling's beautiful sermon on the joy of letting go of objects. And as you let your beautiful objects go, allow me to take that joy in. And going to estate sales in my hometown of Jamestown, New York, Carl and I share a hometown, I always find amazing objects. Oh. And I do know that the word amazing is in the eye and the hand of the beholder. Anyway, a few summers ago, I was visiting my hometown on the hottest day of the year, and I went to an estate sale at a fancy house along the shores of the famous Chautauqua Lake. Now, in a garage, lying on its side in a dim corner on a dirt floor, was something that I had been trying to find for over 25 years. Not actively looking, mind you, but I made a promise to myself that if and when I ever find that, and there it was, Jocko. Now, Jocko is the name for those cast iron jockeys that hold out a ring for horses to be tied to. They are caricatures of black men with large lips and bug eyes. And one of the reasons I wanted one is because as symbols, they are energized to the point of being hot on a continuum with pinup girl calendars and Nazi flags. Now, I remember these little statues from my youth displayed next to driveways throughout my hometown, though they were largely disappeared by 1980. A hometown, by the way, which also had a stop or two along the Underground Railroad. Now, I could have bought a Jocko on eBay, but that's no fun, and the shipping for that would have been insane. And frankly, I could have gone to my grave without owning a Jocko and been no worse for wear. But there it was, lying right there. So I grabbed him. I lifted that heavy cast iron in both hands, and I started carrying him to the checkout table. And here is the heat on the hottest day. When I turned toward the open door, I saw there was only one other customer in the garage, an African-American man inspecting an air conditioner. Immediately, reflexively, I turned my body to block his view of Jocko. Heat. I made it out of the garage, and just before the checkout table, I heard a white woman's voice. "Oh, my! Where did you get that? Honey, I am from North Carolina, and I am telling you, you could never put that out on a lawn in North Carolina. What are you going to do with that? More heat. A third person jumped in. Man, I'm 4 minutes into Jocko. A third person jumped in, pointing to Jocko. I remember when that little guy was at the end of the driveway. Whew, they took him down years ago. So what are you going to do with that? It was an honest question. And beyond buy it and keep it from view from that man in the garage, I had no good answer until I was invited to give a sermon in honor of Martin Luther King Day and did a little more research until I decided to bring Jocko to church as a piece of show and tell, a little reminder of our innocuous racist history, and as a symbol of how the world is changing a little bit. Heat. How a common lawn ornament has disappeared from view, and how hopefully that disappearance reflects changing attitudes and mores in the larger culture. How a white stranger from the South lets a white stranger from the North know, in no uncertain terms, that Jocko is no longer welcome there. Now let us hope that Jocko is welcome nowhere, except where he has found a permanent home as an educational tool in the Jim Crow Museum of Racist Memorabilia at Ferris State University, which he is, where the museum reminds us that to call an African American a lawn jockey is to insult him or her. When used by a black person against another black person, the word lawn jockey is synonymous with Uncle Tom, derogatory term. And when it's used by a white person against a black person, lawn jockey is a racial slur somewhere between darky and the N-word. So what's to do? First, we embrace the fact that Jocko is a rare find. Second, we celebrate that the Port Townsend High School mascot is a Red Hawk. Third, I leave you in the line at the store with the cashier who just realized their mistake and hands you another dollar. I don't want to gyp you. You do not need to be a martyred saint like Gandhi or Martin Luther King. What you do need to do is lean into your life with your talents, to live the values of this religion, to make the content of your character an example for all, and to practice real-world yeses to serve our broad and common unity, rooted in our first and guiding principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That first glorious principle is simply another way to articulate and act upon Martin Luther King's dream to recognize and make manifest the deepest best in all of our character and to actively build and nourish a worthy and dignified community of doers and dreamers, all living together comfortably inside their healthy and radiant skin. Amen.
The musical selection is Melody by Jules Massenet, performed by Akui Goldstein.